Welcome to the Ever Celine podcast, the show that ignites your passion for leadership and empowers you to develop a culture of continuous improvement. I'm your host, Matt Sims, and in each episode, we bring you fascinating insights and invaluable tips from our incredible lineup of guests. What do they all have in common? They share an unwavering dedication to excellence and are the experts in driving engagement, improving metrics, and reducing costs.
The Ever So Lean podcast with Matt Sims. You know it makes sense.
This episode is sponsored by Catalyst Consulting Limited. Catalyst Consulting exists to help people and organisations work better today and be ready for tomorrow. They have a rich history of igniting business transformation using business agility, lean, Six Sigma, strategy deployment, agile and change management. They can help you and your organisation to develop the skills necessary to work and manage differently. To find out more, check out catalystconsulting.co.uk. Welcome along to the Ever Celine podcast, where today we're introduced to the charismatic Alexandra Gibson, the visionary force behind Sandbox Hypnotherapy, where transformation meets tranquility. With a diverse background in IT and educational consultancy, Alexandra took a change of direction, transitioning seamlessly into the realm of clinical hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, and sleep coaching. From her esteemed clinics in London's Harley Street and from the Garden of England in Kent to virtual corridors and corporate settings, Alexandra's mission is clear: to optimise performance and well-being by unlocking the power of quality sleep and stress management. Did you know that as many as one in four people suffer from insomnia, whilst countless others endure sleep deprivation? Join us here on the Ever Celine podcast today as Alexandra sheds light on this overlooked aspect of well-being, revealing how sleep is intricately linked to cognitive performance, physical health, and creative problem-solving. As a clinical hypnotherapist, Alexandra brings expertise in reconfiguring neural networks, guiding individuals and organizations towards lasting change and holistic transformation. So prepare to be inspired as Alexandra shares her insights and strategies for achieving optimal performance and well-being. Alexandra, welcome to the Ever Celine podcast.
Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for inviting me here today. Lovely to be here.
It feels like months that we've been planning this. How long has it actually been?
I'm not sure it's been that long, but yeah, I've been really looking forward to it for a while. So yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I feel like I've spoken to you like five or six times now already.
I know, isn't it strange when you meet somebody and something happens and you think, yeah, we have to do something. So yeah. It's been really interesting talking to you.
Well, you know me, I'll talk to anyone. I'm terrible. I just letter on to anybody who looks at me. Don't make eye contact.
I think it's working quite well for you. But...
Well, yeah, when you have a job that involves talking a lot, I suppose that's probably quite a key skill. If I was introverted, it probably wouldn't work as well. Tell me some things about you then, some things that people might not know. So I've summarised your twists and your turns and your ducks and your dives in your career, yeah. But tell us some more about you.
So I started with a career in education, but when I was at university, I studied a bit of programming. And so a long time ago, when a computer started to get introduced into education, I was often the only person who'd seen one. So I got involved in using IT in education, and I went off in that direction. I became a change manager. I was always very enthusiastic about the things that IT enabled people to do, both inside and outside the classroom in relation to learning, and also how it could help with administration. And so I was very enthusiastic, and I quickly became a consultant in that area and a change manager. And in fact, an area that I worked in was called educational transformation. So I was always hugely enthusiastic about it and actually couldn't really understand why other people didn't have quite the same enthusiasm that I did. So, you know, I'd be sent into these places to help them integrate IT into their, you know, setting up networks, using it in the classroom, this kind of thing, but often met with quite some resistance. And I started to investigate that barriers to working with IT and online learning. And I started to realise that, yeah, not everybody was that interested in changing to what I thought was something very exciting. So instead of it being really about training and putting equipment into different places, it quickly became about how can we help people to feel better and more comfortable about these changes. I worked all over the world. I was very lucky in many different situations with different ministries of education, helping them to modernise their education systems. We're using IT. And then I came back to the UK in 2006 and worked on a project called Building Schools for the Future, which was a very interesting project. But again, I was more and more interested in change and how change happens in big systems, like big public sector systems like education. And I began studying this, and I did a master's degree, and then I fell down the rabbit hole of doing a PhD, like a lot of people do, and realised that actually what I was looking at in terms of understanding change and change management wasn't so much about the different ways of learning and IT, but actually what was going on in people's heads. And then suddenly I was really in a different space.
Fascinating.
You know, trying to understand what helps people to change, why don't people want to change, and how can we help people change? And then I really went off in a different direction, and I was learning more and more about psychology. I was looking at different modalities, different ways of helping people. And I really settled on hypnotherapy, because hypnotherapy is really all about change and helping people to change. And make changes that they want to make, I want to say as well. You know, I'm not about foisting change on other people.
You're not changing them as people without their consent.
And then very quickly, I also discovered that pretty much everybody that came to see me had a sleep problem. So when levels of anxiety and stress are high, then it always pretty much interferes with sleep. And if you're sleeping better, you're feeling better. And if you're feeling better, you're sleeping better. We use sleep for a number of things. But primarily, the part of sleep we call REM sleep is really about processing emotional memory and stress. And so it's really important if people are feeling anxious or stressed to help them to sleep better. So I decided to specialise and focus in this area.
Your findings with regards to change and the mindset of people, It's so true, because just the word change is such an emotive word.
Absolutely.
Immediately, you're going to have people that sit in the camp of, I'm not changing. I've always done it this way. This is me. I'm this person. Then you've got the camp of the people that are like, I love change. Change is exciting. Change is inspiring. When you go into an organization and you're doing change management, we tend not to pitch it at both of those groups. We pitch it as one, this is the change and this is what we're doing. And we don't account for the differences between the people.
Absolutely.
So learning the mindset side of that must have been a really fascinating space. And I think it's something I'd really enjoy as well.
Well, I think also, you know, there's a tendency in organisations when we talk about change for people who are not happy about change to be labelled as resistant and somehow negative.
Yeah, troublemakers.
That's really unfair, I think. I found that out quite quickly, because I was very enthusiastic about what I was doing, and that really not everybody would have the same level of enthusiasm. And you had to ask yourself why and how that. But the fact is, the brain loves a routine, because the brain works on pattern matching. So probably every day you get up and maybe you do more or less the same things in the morning. Most people have a little routine they follow in the morning. Maybe they get up and they brush their teeth and they put their moisturiser on, whenever you're doing that, have a shower, get their breakfast. And they have their routine. The brain loves a routine because it's energy efficient. When we're following a routine, the brain doesn't have to work that hard, right? So the brain loves a routine, number one. The moment that you introduce change into that routine, positive or negative, then the brain goes, oh, hold on a moment. What is this? Is this okay or is this not okay? It does kind of like a threat assessment. And generally, if it doesn't know what's going on, it tends to meet it with suspicion. And then obviously that relates to change. There was something developed in the 1970s, I think, in California. I can't remember if it's Stanford or not. The stress index. Don't look it up, because it'll just make you stressed.
Oh no, you don't say that.
I know, that's like a red flag to them, isn't it? But this stress index is absolutely fascinating. It's of its time, obviously, but so they would try and work out and give people a number for the kind of stress that they were under at any particular time. And on those things were things like changing job, if your kids, changing school, bereavement, divorce, all the classics, but also things like going on holiday, getting married. You know, going on holiday, if we think about it, is quite a big change to most people's routines. Yeah. Getting packed, getting ready, going to the airport, waiting in the queues, all those things. So any kind of change pretty much is stressful for the brain. Mm. So if you want people to embrace change or feel better about a change that they're going through, then really work with reducing their stress and anxiety first. So, for example, quite recently, I was working with a guy who'd moved from France to the UK, and he was not particularly happy about it, and it was very stressful for him. So the first thing to do was obviously help him to feel more relaxed. And once he did that, he started to take that on board much more easily.
So when I've gone away for work and my trips have ranged between one night to two nights to five nights away, I always find, no matter how luxury the hotel is, how posh it is, the first two or three nights, I don't sleep very well. Mm. And by the time I get to the third or fourth night, which tends to be when I'm about to pack up and go home, that I feel relaxed and I can sleep. You're going to tell me that this is just coincidence, but it got to the stage where, because I was going back to the same place quite frequently, Seattle's a great example, right? I was frequently going to Seattle. So I would start to book the same hotel and I'd even ask for the same room, and it genuinely made a difference. And I'd walk in, like the fourth or fifth time I went, I'd walk into the hotel, and as soon as I walked through the door, receptionist would go, "Matt, welcome back. We've got your room ready for you." But I just felt so much more comfortable, and I was able to, even though it was a different time zone, I was able to sleep so much better.
What did we say? The brain loves a routine, yes, right? That's so exactly true. What you were doing. I would do the same thing. I would be traveling maybe 10 to 15 weeks a year, separate 1 week consultancies all around Western Europe. And I would follow little routines. If I could, I would be in a particular hotel, a bit like a Premier Inn, nothing fancy, but just clean, no drama. That's why Premier Inn, I think, is so popular, because, you know, you get a similar room, it's always clean, people know what to expect, no surprises.
Yeah.
And then I would do certain things on certain days. I'd get my stuff out. I'd have my backpack pretty much all the time, because I knew exactly what I would take. I'd take the same stuff all the time. I'd unpack it in a certain way. I'd arrive, I'd unpack, I'd have my little routine, you know. And I think this is also something, getting back to corporate and organizations, that they can help with. And this is getting very, very popular with sports performance and athletes, because they have to travel a lot for their work and also require to perform at their best. So sleep consultancy and sleep coaching is extremely popular with top athletes and footballers and all those people, because they have to travel so much. Now they're doing things like taking their own mattress toppers with them so that their bed is consistent. I talk to people about this also, you know, try and influence your sleep environment as much as you can, not too hot, not too much light, make sure you've got the pillows that you like, those kinds of things, so that you're set up to get the best night's sleep that you can. So when you go to whatever meeting or training course or sports event that you're performing in, that you can hit the ground running.
Yeah, you don't need that time to adapt. My dream is to buy myself an RV. I really know, like a tour bus. And if I have to go away for work, I'm going to rock up in my tour bus.
Well, do you know what? But look how many people use those kinds of things.
It's,
you know,
amazing.
And look at the consistency that they're getting.
Yeah, it's a home from home.
Yeah, their routine.
The only good thing I'd say about Premier Inn is, you know, it's going to be a comfortable night because Lenny Henry said it would be.
Yes, and we all believe what Lenny Henry says.
Yeah, people in America are going, "Who is Lenny Henry?"
No, it's a good brand though, isn't it? I mean, you know, when you're traveling for work or stuff, you just don't, you know, you're not looking for quirky and interesting. Well, personally, I wasn't.
No.
You know, I was just looking for like clean and comfortable.
You go with a brand that you trust. Mm. Also, you go with a brand that gives you good reward points.
Yes, that's always a bonus. But, you know, but really everything you're saying is about exactly what I said. The brain loves a routine, and we should respect that and understand that. Mm. And so whenever we have disruption and we want people to perform well, is to try and get them into a routine that keeps them happy and helps them to perform well.
Especially when you're traveling for work or for sports and stuff like that, you need to be performing. You need to be on the ball.
Absolutely.
You can't afford to lose a night's sleep.
You can't have three nights where you get used to being where you are. Right?
No, you can't. So can you share then some common misconceptions about sleep and its impact on performance and well-being?
Yeah, I mean, probably the most, the worst misconception is, I don't know if it's so true now, but people used to kind of boast about getting such little sleep. So Margaret Thatcher, for example, famous for only having 5 hours sleep. Winston Churchill, I don't know. A lot of these people surviving on very, very little sleep. A lot of people saying, "If you don't have enough time, don't worry. Get up at 5, get up at 4, you know. Sacrifice sleep to make the time that you want to do other stuff. That is a problem, because really we know that you need something between 7 and 9 hours sleep per night.
7 and 9? Yeah. There's absolutely no way. I've got a 1-year-old.
Well,
7 and 9 hours. 7 and 9 minutes would be good.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that's And also, I think this is another thing that organisations should understand, that when people have got young children, they may be sleep deprived, to, you know, help people along with that if they can.
You don't hear of that, actually. You know, you get your paternity leave or your maternity leave, but once you're back to work, you're generally expected to be back at work.
And performing 100%, yeah.
Yeah, that sleep deprivation is awful. It's torturous.
Mm. Interesting you should use the word torturous, because sleep deprivation is against the Geneva Convention. It is actually a form of torture. So that's why it's so important to battle it. Since about 1985, we have been sleeping less and less. And there have been some interesting consequences with that, in my view, around things like obesity and stress. And it's had a big impact on people's wellbeing.
I do wonder if the, you know, the likes of TikTok and YouTube have impacted it, because, you know, everyone gets into bed. Me and my wife do it every night. We get into bed and we're like, we'll just have a look at our phones quickly. Mm. We're both sitting there. Before you know it, an hour's gone by. You started off watching a rerun of a classic Coronation Street episode, and you ended up watching some bloke going down a rabbit hole to pull out a snake by its head. And you're like, how did I end up watching this? Like, this is crazy.
Imagine what you're going to be dreaming about after seeing that. I can't imagine.
Exactly, though. But it's true. It does. It really impacts you. I think my wife told me something about it. So we don't let our children use their iPads or anything, like an hour before bed. There's no computers, no TV, no iPads, because we read somewhere that the brightness of the screens interrupt your sleep.
Yeah.
But if we're traveling for work, how many of us sit there and just fire off a couple of emails before we go to bed, or go on our phone and before we go to sleep? We all do it.
Well, let's talk about that. The problem with screens is they emit what we call blue light. Blue light is the kind of light that you get in the morning. Just to scroll back, most of the issues to do with sleep are with what we can call circadian misalignment. What does that mean? That means basically we're living a modern life that we're not really designed for. So we are designed to kind of be awake when it's light, asleep when it's dark, more or less, 12 hours awake and 12 hours asleep, right? So anything that we do to interfere with that is likely to interfere with our health and our well-being, and also impact probably on sleep. So in the morning when we wake up, the sun is bright. Imagine it was today.
Nice.
And we are subject to what we call blue light. That has an influence on our brain. We start to produce things like melatonin, and we feel awake and we feel ready for the day. So as the light goes down and the temperature goes down as well, that's a signal to the brain to release melatonin and for us to start to feel sleepy. Okay, so guess what? If you pick up a screen and start looking at it, it's saying, hello, it's morning time.
Wow.
You know, you have such a good shout for your kids, Matt. Absolutely correct. But really, you need to maybe think about, applying that to yourself. Because the fact, you know what's right. Yeah. Your subconscious knows what's right.
As I say, not as I do.
Yeah, my dad always used to say that too. So, yeah, I guarantee you will see the benefit if you slept a little longer and just put the phones down.
I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could physically do that. It's hard. It's an addiction, isn't it? Is what it really is. Like back in with America, it's different. You don't have to do it in Europe now. But you know when you used to have to like turn your roaming off?
Yes.
Because if you get a massive phone bill. So when I go to America, the roaming goes off and I don't get any withdrawal symptoms because I know it would cost me a fortune if I did it. But if I was doing it in my own home and I didn't use it, the compulsion to do it, I think, would just be overwhelming.
Okay, well, I mean, let's go back to change and how change works in the brain. The brain doesn't like a threat, right? So we never like to catch things in terms of a negative. So if you do this, something bad will happen. That doesn't really work with the brain. What generally happens is the brain wants to do it even more. So if you say to somebody, don't eat chocolate biscuits, you'll get really fat. Guess what?
Yeah.
You're in the kitchen eating a packet of chocolate biscuits.
Yeah.
So what we like to do is emphasize the positive and think about the benefits. What might the benefits be? So think about when you go to the States and you don't use your roaming, because it's quite easy for you not to, because your brain is very clear on the benefits of that, you know.
Yeah.
What difference does it make? How do you feel when you're not on your phone at later?
I think, do you know what? It's because I'm on an adventure. So because my whole world is different, it doesn't feel strange that I'm not doing it.
Mm.
But when I'm in my natural environment, in my own habitat, and maybe it's routine, you know, the routine is there.
That's right.
It feels like if I'm not doing it, that something's missing.
Mm. So how do you sleep generally when you go to the States? I mean, and how are you performing? Are you having a good time? Are you enjoying yourself?
It's a hard one because the experiment's kind of flawed because of it takes me, like I said before, a few nights to get used to sleeping. Mm. I guess actually thinking about it, I probably sleep a lot better, but that could be that I just haven't got a baby waking me up every 30 seconds.
Yeah, that would help.
There's too many crossover, you know, in the world of continuous improvement, you would say sort of isolate and do one change at a time. And I've gone, in this situation, I've changed everything at once.
I think actually that's interesting in terms of continuous improvement. I think because when you're trying to improve sleep, there's unlikely to be one single magic bullet. It's likely to be a variety of things that you do. But, you know, but in terms of phones, what a lot of people do is they tend to, I have my phone on Do Not Disturb from 8 o'clock in the evening till 8 o'clock in the morning. So I'm not disturbed by texts or calls at all.
Wow.
You know.
I'm amazed. It's like you're an alien sitting in front of me, Alexandra. How do you do
that? Right. That's interesting. I didn't think it was that. It's quite easy. There's a thing you can do on your phone.
You've got a second phone. You've got a secret phone, haven't you?
No, I don't. And then leave your phone downstairs, charge it downstairs. Well, charge it in the kitchen somewhere, you know, where you spend your evenings, you know, if you're in the living room or lounge or whatever. Don't charge it near where you are. Charge it in the kitchen or whatever. And when you go up to bed, leave it there.
But I'll be running up and down the stairs every couple of minutes. I'll be exhausted.
Maybe you wouldn't be. Oh, no, maybe you would be exhausted, but maybe you wouldn't be running up and down the stairs. I think, the thing is to think about the broader goals and the benefits of how well you would be feeling if you were sleeping better.
But maybe this is something that the hotels have cottoned on to, because most modern hotels now don't seem to put a plug next to the bed. It's on the other side of the room by the desk. And you can't have your phone next. So you've got to make a decision between charging your phone or watching YouTube before you go to sleep.
I don't know. But certainly I would, you know, try to limit screen time after 8 o'clock, I would say.
I'll try it tonight and I'll let you know tomorrow how I got on, all right?
I don't know if one night is going to radically change everything.
Oh, is it not good enough? What's the sort of reasonable amount of time to get a real measure of success?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. Look, I need another coffee. I need a stronger coffee.
I don't know if you want to talk about caffeine now.
I'll be buzzing. Yeah, I'm not going to get you started on caffeine.
No, let's not do that.
Right, so I've got another question for you. I'm going to fire this one at you.
Yes, go.
How do you approach helping individuals and organisations overcome barriers to improving their sleep quality?
Well, I think the first thing is, again, to look at the benefits of sleep. Research tells us that people who are sleep deprived don't work as well. Their cognitive performance is not as good. Problem solving, decision making, not as good. And also not only that, there's good evidence to show that supervisors and managers that are sleep deprived, their teams don't work as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. And also there's good evidence to show also that regardless of sector, or socioeconomic class, people that sleep more earn more.
I'm off to bed, Alexandra.
I know, that's the thing.
Talk to you later.
It's just that the evidence is very, very clear.
I don't know if this is true. I don't know where this has come from, but I've heard people say that the most wealthy people are early birds.
That's interesting, because I was reading some research just the other day, you know, that people are generally divided into what they call larks and owls. I don't know if you're aware of this, but people who maybe get up naturally are better in the mornings and go to bed early, or what we call the larks, people who naturally go to bed late and get up late. There's about 20% of both those, and then most of us are kind of somewhere in the middle.
I'm an owl.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah.
That's not terrible, but research has shown that perhaps larks is better for health.
Okay.
Because I suppose we're getting back to circadian alignment, aren't we? That actually, if we're awake during the day and asleep at night, that's more related to our natural state of being.
When I used to do shift work, it was a 6 till 2 or it was a 2 till 7.
Mm.
And I always preferred the 2 till 7. I just felt better throughout the day that I didn't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and be ready to go.
Well, I guess we're getting up at 5 o'clock is very early, isn't it? In most people's books, that would constitute partly the night, wouldn't it?
When I was a postman, I used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and I've worked with many people like that. The thing about shift work is it's seriously bad for your health, and there have been serious discussions on paying people more for shift work because of the long-term health implications. So getting back to working with organisations, there needs to be a good appreciation of that. The thing is about shift work, it's a necessity of modern living, isn't it? People who work in hospitals, emergency services, whatever, we want them to cover us 24 hours a day, don't we? So it's an inevitability of some kinds of work, for sure. But the most important thing is not to change that shift too often. if you're constantly changing it, that's very disruptive to sleep patterns. And that's also one of the key things about sleep, that sort of getting back to, you know, how we work with people who've got sleep problems, that actually routine is the first thing we talk to them about. Get into a sleep routine and try to stay with it, even on the weekends or holidays. You know, if you go to bed at 10:30, go to bed at 10:30. Obviously, the odd night here and there is okay. That, you know, nothing bad's going to happen. But in general, try to stay with the same routine.
When I was on the post, I did a few different patterns of work. Mm-hmm. So the standard pattern of work was 6 days a week, Monday to Saturday. You would have every sixth week off. So you'd work 5 weeks of Monday to Saturday, and then you'd have a full week off, which was really nice because effectively you get 3 months of the year off.
Lovely.
The other shift pattern was where you had a rotating day and you would only work 5 days in a week, but you only once in, what, seven would you get, or once in six, would you get 2 days off together? They'd be split. Mm. And I always found that pattern much harder to adapt to.
So it seems like there was more consistency with the pattern that you preferred, I think.
The routine, yeah. Totally. The routine of it, my body would adapt to it. Although it was hard going, your body would know that you had that week coming up.
Yeah.
Okay, so what role does knowledge of sleep process and stress management techniques play in enhancing sleep quality? And how do they relate to overall performance?
Well, we know that sleep is made up of different phases. That's what we call slow wave sleep. So that's often people term that deep sleep, but technical term slow wave sleep, and what we call REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. During REM sleep, we are processing emotional memory or stress. You know how it works. You might have a difficult day and you might go home and you might say to your partner, "Oh, I had a really hard day today." And they'll say to you, "Oh, don't worry about it. You know, you'll feel better tomorrow." And during the night, what will happen is during REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, your brain's very active and it'll be playing the situation over and over and over again. Either you'll see the actual pictures of what happened or the movie of what happened, or more likely you'll see it as a metaphor. So, for example, I still dream about my university exams that I did when I was 21. And I'm a lot older than 21 now. But yeah, that's really annoying, isn't it? I don't dream about work so much now because I really love my work. But before, I used to dream about work a lot. And I used to wake up in the morning and be quite annoyed. I think, God, I've been at work 24 hours a day. But, you know, what you're doing is you're processing stress and emotional memory. And then in the morning, you wake up and think, well, I don't feel too bad.
Why do we sometimes remember our dreams and sometimes do we not then?
So you're dreaming all the time in slow wave sleep as well as REM sleep. But what happens is we often wake up in an unnatural way. Most people wake up with an alarm, for example. So if you wake up during a REM phase when you're actually dreaming, that might be the time when you remember those dreams. That's most likely. But the fact is that you're dreaming all the time. We dream in 90-minute cycles. And at the beginning of the night, we have a lot of slow wave sleep and a bit of REM. And then through the night, we have more and more REM sleep. And during that period of time, during slow wave sleep, our brain is strengthening memories. And during REM sleep also, it's organizing memories and making connections between different experiences and learning that we've got.
Are you ready to elevate your team's ways of working? Are you seeking fresh insights and growth opportunities? Our experts will assess your team's practices, providing valuable insights for improvement and celebration. Reward and recognize your team with this certification tailored specifically for creating an improvement culture. The BQF Academy accreditation acknowledges your journey, outstanding outcomes, and future plans. Whether you utilize Lean, Six Sigma, project management, or continuous improvement techniques, this certification celebrates your incredible work and positive impact. Propel your team's performance to new heights with the BQF Team Excellence Culture Certification. Visit www.bqf.org.uk today and let's celebrate your success together.
13-time Shingo Prize winner Dr. Jeffrey Liker and Toyota Kata author Mike Rother have created the Improvement Kata and Coaching Kata online course. This inexpensive, compact program is designed to transform your thinking and approach, making you a highly skilled learner and coach. Engage in deliberate practice to turbocharge your progress. You also get lifetime access to the materials, including all of the bonus interviews. Why pay up to 10 times the price elsewhere, listening to some consultant, when you can gain direct insights from the masters themselves? Skip the rest and go with the best. Join us today and embark on your journey to excellence. Just click on the link below to start your journey.
Well, that's why sleep is so important. You know, we're theoretically supposed to spend quite a lot of time doing it, but it's incredibly important for physical and mental health. We're basically what we call monophasic sleepers. Basically, we sleep once, generally. Most of us have one sleep a day. So babies, for example, what they call polyphasic, they sleep lots of times during the day. And one of the theories about that is that actually they're processing so much information and stuff in their brains, and the neural networks are being formed and that kind of thing, and they need that kind of sleep to do that.
We follow some kind of app, and they like message you to tell you what phase your baby's going through. Okay. They call them leaps, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And so with my youngest, we've been following her leaps, and it will say, right, congratulations. I don't know why it says congratulations, because it tends to be a nightmare period, but they'll say, congratulations, your baby is now entering leap number four. Now, leap number four, during this period, they are going to start recognizing voices to people, and they'll start being able to gesticulate what they want and where they want to go, and they'll get very emotional when you take something away from it. It tells you all this sort of stuff. And we find that when that happens, every single time there's a sleep regression for her and for us. But there's a sleep regression that goes with that leap. It's almost like as the brain is learning these new skills and it's joining up bits and connecting these dots, she sleeps less for some reason, which you think it would be the other way around.
Well, that is interesting. And how old is your daughter now?
Women talk in months, men talk in years.
Okay.
So for me, she's one. But my wife, I go, oh, she's 18 months, 6 days and 12 hours.
But yeah, sleep is absolutely essential for learning and organising information in the brain and processing stress. So getting back to how does knowledge of sleep processes help performance, well, understanding the role of sleep and how it works is extremely important. Because we don't really value it enough. As I said, since 1985, we've been sleeping less and less, and people are becoming more and more sleep deprived. People are trying to pack more and more into their days. They're commuting longer hours. People are juggling more responsibilities, trying to do it all. And sleep is the part that's getting cut back.
But is that because, like, pre-1985, we was very much a 9-to-5 culture where everything just closed after 5 o'clock?
Well, I've got a little theory about this. I mean, I don't know if you'll agree with it, but this is just a personal theory.
Yeah.
That actually, in the 1980s, prior to that, people had quite stable work lives. It wasn't that unusual for people to work somewhere for most of the majority of their working lives, for example.
Mm.
And you'll know that from the post office, I should think. But increasingly, that's become very unusual. People, are working. We've got the gig economy now, of course, and many people working freelance, self-employed. But, you know, people just aren't working in one place for that long. So what happens then is that you've got a lot more uncertainty for sure, but also that people are maybe living in a place but having to move and travel to different places while trying to keep their home static. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
So they tend to be traveling more. I mean, I think having lived and worked in lots of countries, I'm shocked by the amount of commuting that people do in this country. You know, London is the economic centre of the UK, and personally, I would love to see a lot more of that business pushed out regionally so that people could work more locally. I think that's also why there's such a big resistance, I think, for a lot of people to go back to the office now.
It's that baby boomer generation was a very loyal generation, weren't they? Were like, you know, I work for this company, I give my everything to this company, I will work these hours. But the generations that followed that, the expectations from them have changed.
Well, I think that cuts both ways because they don't have the security they had before either. People had much more job security in the past.
Yeah. Well, like you say, with the post, it was a job for life. You went into
Correct.
It. It was like the army.
There's no such thing. Not in the army now either, no. As you're probably aware. But So I feel like that's that kind of instability. Don't forget, the brain loves a routine.
Yeah.
That kind of keep coming back to it. That kind of instability has had a knock-on effect, I think, for people's routines.
I think that's a good name for the episode.
Yeah,
the brain loves a routine.
Probably that's the bottom line, really. Although, having said that, though, I want to say one thing, that actually sometimes you can get stuck in a routine because it's a routine. It's not necessarily the best thing for you.
So there's bad routines that we just sort of drift into and can't find our way out of it.
Yeah, and sometimes people stay in jobs that are not particularly good for them or don't realise their ambitions because they think, actually, I'm safer doing this because I don't know. The unknown is more of a threat.
That's so true. Yeah, better the devil you know. Because you do, you become, especially in larger organisations, you become sort of institutionalised to what you're in, and you feel like there's no outside world.
Absolutely. People do become institutionalised, that's true. There's nothing wrong with being working somewhere for the whole of your life at all, you know, if you've got that option, I'm not sure. But I suppose you have to think, am I happy? Am I fulfilled with what I'm doing? And is this good for me?
Yeah, like life-changing questions there. It's a bit heavy. If you're listening to this first thing in the morning, maybe don't make the decision yet. Wait till later on.
Yeah.
Have a coffee first.
And be relaxed when you make decisions, because that's where, you know, we get things like procrastination. When we feel stressed, our sympathetic nervous system's activated, our fight-flight response. That's not a good time to make a decision, right? So if our anxiety levels or stress levels are too high, we might find that we're making decisions based on running away from something, which is not necessarily the best decision to make. So if you're suffering from procrastination or decision-making issues, then I would always say work on stress first, because when you're happy and relaxed, you're going to make the right decision for you.
I wonder if that's where the saying of sleep on it came from.
Totally.
Don't make the decision where you feel a bit emotive.
Totally. Well, I think, you know, there's a very famous study done with math students where they gave half the set of problems in the morning and asked them to solve them in the evening, and then gave the other half the same problems but gave them the evening and asked them to solve them in the morning. And there was a shortcut to these problems, but they didn't tell the students there was a shortcut. So the group that had them in the morning and had to solve them in the evening, 20% of them found the shortcut. The group that had them in the evening and had to solve them in the morning after sleeping, 60% of them found the shortcut. And this has been repeated many, many times. You know, during that REM phase, it's also about problem solving. You've probably heard of the periodic table. Mm-hmm. Do you remember in chemistry?
I do.
There was a guy called Mendeleev who discovered it. He discovered it during his sleep. He woke up, he was sleeping, and he was dreaming about a table.
It just came to him. That's like the flux capacitor. Doc, yeah. In Back to the Future, he thought of it when he banged his head. He was knocked out and it came to him.
There you go. So he's obviously in a hypnagogic state. So, you know, that REM state is very important for problem solving and making connections between knowledge and learning experience that we have.
Yeah, that's a big difference as well, isn't it? A massive sway in the percentages.
Many traders are very interested in this kind of problem solving. There was an interesting study that I was reading about recently about young managers and older managers. And they asked these managers, do you believe in intuition? And overwhelmingly, the group of young managers said no. And overwhelmingly, the older group of managers said yes. But is it intuition? I mean, the view really is that these older managers had all this experience and all this knowledge. They didn't quite know how they made that decision or what they even knew, but they were able to come up with better decisions based on that. And in fact, their knowledge and the complexity of the brain and problem solving.
So that wisdom that comes with experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny because I could be working on something. So say I'm creating some training and I'll be working on it till late at night and I'll hit a brick wall, right? 10, 11 o'clock at night, I cannot fathom how to solve this problem. And so often I'll go to bed, I'll get up the next morning, have some breakfast, have a cup of coffee, load the laptop up, look at it and bang, immediately, problem solved. I've done it.
That's it, precisely. When I was younger, I was very much of the revise the night before the exam type of person. And I think that's probably quite normal for teenagers to be like that, but it didn't really get me anywhere. But as I've got older, I find that the more difficult the problem is, the more runs it I need. And I start to try and look at it maybe as long as I can, maybe 2 or 3 weeks if possible, and just have a few runs at it. And every time I have another run at it, I know a little bit more about how to solve it.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's going on during sleep. Your brain needs time to process stuff. It really does. And learning. And that's what's, a large part of what's going on when we're sleeping.
Absolutely fascinating.
Well, we all sleep, don't we? And we can all use it to...
Right. So without breaking any kind of confidentiality, because I'm sure there's some rules there somewhere, can you tell us about any case studies or success stories from your work as a sleep coach and hypnotherapist that might inspire people?
Well, one of the most common things that people seem to suffer from is what they call the Sunday scaries. I don't know whether you've come across this, have you? Oh, it's all over TikTok. It's the sort of thing where people start to feel very anxious the day before they have to go to work.
I've suffered with that myself, actually.
Yeah. It's incredible. They're calling it the Sunday Scaries. That has a name now. But I guess we've all suffered from it. You know, and certainly if you've got a board meeting or presentation or something you've got to do, you know, the night before, you might not sleep that well. That's quite a common thing. And of course, we know if you don't sleep that well, maybe you don't perform that well. And if you don't sleep that well, you're maybe not processing anxiety and stress that well. And guess what? The next morning, you might be feeling a little bit more anxious and a bit more stressed. So it's a bit like chicken and the egg. So one of the things that we work with is how to break that cycle of feeling that way. So a lot of that is done through questioning and talking about beliefs. So, you know, if I had somebody come and see me, which I have, who says, I'm always feeling this way, I would say, well, how are you feeling on the other days? And what difference is that making? And what are you thinking? And what's your routine? And they say, yes, but I always believe that. And say, but what if you didn't believe that? What if you believed that you really could sleep? And visualizing sleeping well. Visualization is incredibly important. We have incredible imaginations. And one of the ways to create anxiety and stress is through what we call negative forecasting. So if you say to me, I'm not going to sleep well tonight, guess what?
You're not going to sleep well.
You're probably not going to sleep well tonight. So chipping away at self-limiting beliefs is incredibly important. And when people say something like, I'm not a good sleeper, we have to question that and say, okay, well, is that every night of the week? Or can we say that sometimes you're not a good sleeper? What are you doing when it's working or what you're doing when it's not working? We also go through particular things related to sleep routine, environment, you know, set up in the bedroom, things like stimulants, like caffeine, screen time as well. I saw this woman recently who had a real problem about sleep. And as soon as she came in, she said, I'm just not good at this. I can't do this and I can't sleep. And as soon as we were able to just open up that door of possibility and stop thinking in absolutes about I can't do something and like maybe I can or sometimes I do, things change very, very rapidly.
Can you try too hard to sleep?
Absolutely. It's like when somebody says to you, try and relax.
Yeah, it's the opposite, yeah, isn't
yeah. it? It does the opposite, yeah. Exactly. So we have what we call top-down approach as well, exactly like this, where we sort of chip away at people's self-limiting beliefs and also looking at the environment and routine and that kind of thing. So working with the brain to control the body. But also we can work with the body to control the brain. So one of the typical ways of doing that is what we call, you know, breath work. So breathing's slowing down the heart rate, slowing down the blood pressure, bringing it down, feeling better. And often breathing is a good technique for that. But also we've got trance, hypnotherapy. And we haven't really spoken about, I can't believe we've been talking about this. We've always talked about trance. Because that is the key thing. Right? We've been talking about talking and also about what we call psych education. Psych education is all the knowledge around routine, environment, all that stuff. But trance is incredibly powerful. When we put somebody into trance, it's just a state of deep relaxation. That's all. Okay. And when they're in that trance, the state that we're putting them in, their brain is in a similar state to, guess what, REM sleep. So when they're in that state during REM sleep, they're processing emotional memory, they're reducing stress, and they're feeling more relaxed. So also what I do when people come and see me is I give them a recording to listen to. And then actually when we do sessions, we're doing trance as well.
I've had hypnotherapy sessions. I think I told you this before.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They were recorded and I've got the recordings on my phone and each one is about 30 minutes long. And, you know, hand on my heart, I've listened to these multiple times for different anxiety and different triggers. There's an episode that I can listen to and I cannot tell you what's in it after the first 5 minutes or so.
Good.
It really puts me into a state that I think it's that trance.
That's exactly that REM-like state.
Yeah.
Where your brain is processing emotional memories and it's problem solving. We call it the problem solving state.
I used to come out of those sessions feeling so relaxed. I feel like I was walking on cushions. It's difficult to explain. I just feel like I was walking on clouds. It sounds like I was high or something. Probably.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. So, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the stress bucket. So what we say is a metaphor for the stress that we're carrying around with us. All the anxiety that we have, we're carrying around in the stress bucket. So, you know, all the sort of thing, worrying about presentation that we've got to give, writing a report that's a bit tricky, having a disagreement with your partner or kids playing up or, you know, worrying about what's going on in Gaza or watching Newsnight or watching true crime, all those things going and going again. And what we say is we've got to stop putting stuff in the stress bucket and also start to reduce it. So REM sleep is extremely important for reducing that. I remember a guy came to see me recently. He said to me, yes, but I still feel really stressed. And he said, sometimes I get really furious. And I said to him, oh, okay. So signs of stress are anger, anxiety, depression, or a mixture of all of those three things. If you're feeling any of those things or a combination of them, that's a sign that your stress bucket is getting too full. So anyway, the guy says to me, I just get really furious sometimes. I said, oh, really? Okay, well, I think this is interesting. What makes you furious? And he said, well, he said, when I read those newspaper articles and I read the comments, it makes me so angry. And I said to him, oh, okay, that's really interesting. I said, how would it be if you didn't read the comments? And he said, oh. He said, well, I tell you what, I'll give it a try. He gave it a try. Honestly, the next week, very different person.
Wow.
We have...
I was just going to say that it's amazing. It's like such a small thing.
Well, it's amazing, but it isn't if you think about it.
Well, it's obvious in a certain way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is obvious. But sometimes it helps to talk to somebody about this stuff because we don't always see the obvious things, do we?
No, we don't. We don't see what's in front of us.
So it's a habit maybe we get into and then maybe we just don't question, why am I doing this and is this good for me? You know, and it really made a big difference. And it just, that what first chip into the situation started to turn things around. Because you can get into a vicious circle with sleep. If you feel stressed and you don't sleep, then guess what? You're more stressed the next day because you haven't been processing the stress that you've been carrying around with you. Right? And then you feel more stressed so you don't sleep. So this is how it goes. But if you get onto a virtuous circle where suddenly you are sleeping better, the tables are turned and then suddenly things can improve quite quickly. I mean, I only see people for about 6 to 8 sessions. This isn't a kind of like a psychotherapeutic journey that goes on for years and years. But it's just getting to that one thing perhaps that might just shift things that people go, oh, okay. And then suddenly they're sleeping better. And when they're sleeping better, they're processing. It's quick. When they're sleeping better, they're processing emotional memory. And they're feeling better the next day. And then guess what? They're better equipped. They've got more capacity to deal. We can't control stuff that's going on around us, right? But we can control our reaction to it. So we often say it's not the situation that's causing the problem so much as our thinking around it.
I don't know what the technical term is. If I've got to be up really early the next day, I do what I call in my house panic sleeping that night. Where I'm looking at the clock and it's midnight. And I'm like, I need to go to sleep. I've got to be up at 6 o'clock. And then I look at the clock again. It's up past 12. Like, I need to go to sleep. I've got to be up tomorrow. And I panic sleep. So I sleep. I don't get to sleep for ages because I'm panicking about the fact that I'm not sleeping. Is there a technical term for that? Or is panic sleeping the right term?
No. Well, that is a bit like the Sunday scaries, isn't it, that we talked about? You know, you're anticipating the next day and it's interfering with your sleep. How would you feel if you went to bed early?
I think I would feel that I would sleep better. But the other side of me would be like, well, I've got things to do and I'm not doing the things that I need to do.
What's more important, to do the things you need to do or to go to bed early? How can you reprioritise that?
So you're very logically speaking.
That's exactly, it's all logic. Because we're talking, you've got your intellectual mind. And when I'm speaking to you, we're talking intellectually now, aren't we? I'm talking to your intellectual. Your primitive mind might be going, oh my God, I've got this thing to do. But your intellectual mind is the one that's controlling you, that's driving you.
Oh, it's so interesting. I feel like I'm being analysed.
Oh no.
It's amazing. No, it's good.
But that's, you know, I was very lucky early on in my consulting career to be trained in what they call client-centered consulting. Generally, you believe that the client has the resources and the skills that they need.
Yeah.
So you're not going in as a consultant to say, do this, do that. Nobody likes being told what to do.
No.
Do they? I know I don't.
No, no, absolutely really not.
No, exactly. I know. I'm sure we're on the same page. So if I was to say to you, oh, okay, Matt, do this, do that, and do the other, you go, oh, no, I'm not doing that. Your primitive brain would go, no, what's she doing? Tell me what to do.
You do, you switch off.
Yeah, of course. But and it's the same in the business world, you know, when you go into somebody's organization and help, you ask them questions and they come up with their solutions. If necessary, you might suggest that they need some input from somewhere. But generally, they will make the right decisions for them because they know you are the expert on you and your life. I'm not.
I guess, yeah, but we all look for answers in someone else, don't we? Because we don't believe
we've got the answers. Do we look for the answers in someone else? Or do we look for validation?
Yeah, exactly. Outwardly we do, but inwardly we... So it's like, I know people, right? I won't say them who they are because they'll know who I'm talking about. But I know people that will ring me up and ask me advice. If I don't say what they want me to say, they'll ring someone else. Then they'll ring someone else. And they go around until they find the person that says what they want them to say. And then they go, that's what I'm going to do.
So there you are. Exactly. You've answered your own question there. But I would say that actually we make better decisions when we're relaxed and not stressed. And so although we do have the answers, we don't want to be running away from something. It's like the old polar bear. You know, if you ran into a polar bear in the street, what would you do?
Run away.
That would be a sensible decision. But actually, what we don't want to be doing is making decisions in our life like we're running away from a polar bear. What we want to do is making intellectual decisions when we're feeling happy and relaxed. Because when we're happy and relaxed, we're making decisions that are right for us.
So this is where we haven't evolved as a species to the modern day climate. We're still very, the fight or flight stuff. I know it's important, but it was built around a time where you might bump into a polar bear.
Absolutely. And do you know what? We wouldn't want to take that away. You don't want to take somebody's fear response away. You know, if you came up against a wild barking dog, you'd be right to be afraid, right?
Yeah.
That's fear. Anxiety is something different. Fear is something real. You should be afraid and you should take the appropriate action. Your brain should be pushing you to fight or flight, whatever is suitable in that situation. But anxiety is different. Anxiety is negatively forecasting. It's imagining something bad will happen in the future, and that's not that useful. Imagine a lion, a marathon runner, and an antelope, right?
Yeah.
They're all getting ready to run. And the chemicals that are being released are pretty much the same in those situations. But why is the lion running?
It's chasing them.
It's running after the antelope, right? It's right, like it's a predator. Why is the antelope running?
It's running away from the lion.
And why is the marathon runner running?
So he can catch it on his phone, so he can video
it. They're on a... I'm not in the same race here. But, you know, very often chemicals that are released, things like adrenaline, for example... Adrenaline is released in the body when we are in fight-flight response, but it's also released when you're on a roller coaster. You know, you don't want too much adrenaline and cortisol running around your body. It's not particularly healthy. Actually, this is something that I do work with. I've been seeing somebody recently who is a top estate agent, and they get a real buzz out of their work. They absolutely love it. They're quite young, and they're dealing with quite difficult people a lot of the time. So they're really good, and it's a very thrilling, complex project management type of role that they've got. They really enjoy it, but it's very stressful, and that's had some negative effects on their sleep and well-being. So what we're working on is, I don't think that person loves their job. I don't think that they want to stop doing that job. That might be the answer for some people, find a different job, but I don't think that's really what this person wants. That's not what they're telling me anyway. So what we're working on is, how can you really enjoy that ride, that flow, that feeling of energy, that buzz that you get? And how can you feel that and get that really good feeling when you're in the zone, when you're giving that presentation and everything is going really well? And feeling that feeling and being in that zone, being what a lot of people call it, the flow. You know, when you're there and you're buzzing and you're firing on all cylinders. So it's not necessarily stress and adrenaline, but it's just a great form of like really strong enthusiasm and happiness in being the best that you can be and performing at your absolute best.
I think when that passion starts flowing,
yeah,
it flows freely.
Yeah.
When you haven't got boundaries, you know, you're not reading a script, or you're just flowing freely because you're passionate about what you're talking about, and it comes across as just so genuine, doesn't it? Cool, but I've got to put you to the test yet.
Oh, no. On the yes, no game. Okay, let's have a go.
So just before we do that, is there any other questions that I haven't asked you that you think is important information to get out to people that are listening right now?
Okay, I would say quick wins, just quickly.
Yes.
Have a routine, you know, try to go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time. Get early morning sunlight. That's very important for melatonin. Be careful about what you're putting in your stress bucket. You know, don't watch Newsnight before you go to bed and all those true crime things. You know, watch something fluffy.
Yeah, or don't watch anything at all.
Exactly. Screen time. Yeah. That's another one. And, you know, be happy and relax. And if you need help, you know where to come.
Yeah. How can people get in contact with you? Where's your website? What have they got to go to?
Well, my website's called Sandbox Hypnotherapy. I've got a practice in Harley Street, Whitstable and Herne Bay, but I also see people online, and also I work with organisations. So give me a call. I'm always happy to chat to people.
But we're going to see how brilliant you are now at the Yes No game. So this is the world famous game that people come on this podcast just for this. This is what they come to do. This is what it's all about. The rest of the stuff is just filler. How this works is I'm going to ask you some weird and wonderful questions, and you can say anything you like, but you cannot say the words yes or no.
Okay.
So I've got three cards in front of me. Yeah, that's a good start. I've got three cards in front of me. Each one has a different topic or theme associated. Which would you like? Card number one, card number two, or card number three?
One, please.
Card number one is travel and adventure. So your theme is all about travelling and the adventures you might have on the travels. Now, I'm going to do my utmost to catch you out. You've got to try and survive 60 seconds without slipping up. Are you ready for this, Alexandra? This is a big moment.
I'm ready.
Yes. Right. Oh, that's me. See, I'm putting it in your head. I'm putting it in your head. Right, here we go. 60 seconds are loaded. It's Alexandra's moment to not say yes or no. It's as easy as that. Have you ever taken a spontaneous trip to a destination without any prior planning?
I don't think so.
Do you enjoy trying out local cuisines and delicacies when travelling to new places?
Always.
Can you share a name of someone who you met on one of your trips?
James.
Have you ever travelled solo to explore a new destination?
Never.
What's the word that comes into your mind first when I say the word plane?
Airport.
Did you say airport?
Airport.
Have you ever been open to staying in unique accommodations like tree houses, pods, or eco-friendly resorts?
I haven't ever stayed in an eco-friendly resort, but I have stayed in a tent. I guess that's the same thing.
Was it cold?
Very cold.
Alexandra, you are an absolute pro.
I can't believe it.
You did so well. You didn't flinch.
I don't believe it.
You was calm and collected. You'll be processing that in your REM sleep tonight.
I will be. I can't believe that I made it through that. Wow.
You was really good. We got quite far in as well. I did manage to do, there were six core questions there and I think three sub-questions that we did, which is a lot of questions.
Wow. I didn't think I'd do it.
Well, people, when they complete it, they don't even get through that many questions. That might be the most I've ever done.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see, maybe because I talk for a living that I just...
Yeah, but you're very aware. I think you're very aware of your mind. So you maybe there's something in that. You stopped yourself.
I did have to think about what I said.
What we need to do is we need to get three or four hypnotherapists on and run an experiment. That'd be a good way of doing it, wouldn't it?
Oh.
Well, thank you so much for taking part. You're a whiz in the professional world and you're a whiz at the yes-no game. I've absolutely enjoyed the last hour. It's been amazing.
Thank you so much, Matt. It's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Today's discussion with Alexandra was so interesting and it was rich with insights on optimizing sleep, managing stress and enhancing decision making. Let's delve into the key takeaways. Firstly, Alexandra emphasized the importance of routine and comfort in achieving better sleep and performance. Establishing familiar routines and creating a cozy sleep environment, whether at home or traveling, can significantly improve sleep quality. We also explored the negative impact of screens, particularly the blue light emitted by devices like phones and laptops on sleep quality. Alexandra highlighted the importance of avoiding screens before bedtime and regulate the body's natural sleep-wake cycle. Furthermore, the discussions debunked the misconception that sacrificing sleep for productivity is beneficial. Alexandra stressed the importance of getting adequate sleep, typically between 7 and 9 hours per night, for optimal performance and overall well-being. Insights into change management were provided, highlighting the need to understand individual mindsets and routines. Alexandra spoke about the importance of respecting people's preferences to facilitate smoother transitions and acceptance of change. It goes back to the heart of continuous improvement, and that's respect for people. Positive framing emerged as a powerful tool for encountering behavioural change, with Alexandra emphasising the benefits of focusing on healthier habits rather than dwelling on negatives. The conversation underscored the interconnectedness of sleep, routine, mindset and performance, providing valuable insights for individuals and organisations seeking to optimise well-being and productivity. Shifting gears into decision making, Alexandra shared that lack of sleep can impair our abilities. Sleeping on a problem often leads to better solutions and decisions, highlighting the importance of quality sleep in problem solving. Remember the age-old saying, "I'll sleep on it." I reckon that's where it comes from. REM sleep was highlighted as critical for problem solving and learning. Examples such as Mendeleev's discovery of the periodic table during a dream illustrate the significance of REM sleep. Experience and intuition were also discussed as vital components of decision making. Alexandra emphasized the role of trusting instincts while considering logical reasoning, particularly for seasoned professionals. We also explored the benefits of trance and hypnotherapy in reducing stress and improving sleep. As Alexandra highlighted, their effectiveness in accessing the subconscious mind is absolutely amazing. I've been through it myself, and I personally found it gave me a massive improvement in every area of my life. Addressing Sunday scaries, as Alexandra put it, and managing anxiety involves techniques such as questioning beliefs, visualization, and reframing thoughts. These practices can promote better sleep and overall well-being. In summary, Alexandra's insights on managing our stress bucket and balancing rational and emotional decision-making are critical for success. Remember, prioritizing sleep, maintaining healthy routines, and managing stress effectively are foundational for well-being and peak performance. That brings us to an end of this episode of the Ever Selene podcast. Thanks so much to Alexandra for joining us today and really opening the can of worms that is sleep and performance. I've learned so much, and there's so many things from today's show that I'm going to take away and try and practice. Although I'm not sure I could go 3 weeks without touching my phone at night. We'll see how we get on. If you enjoyed today's episode and want more, be sure to subscribe and follow the Ever Selene podcast on your preferred platform or at everselene.com. There you can catch up on any missed episodes and explore the range of services that we now offer, including leadership coaching, lean excellence consultancy, podcasting services, and event hosting. Take a moment to like and review the Ever Selene podcast on your listening platform. Your review really does mean so much to me. So thanks so much, and I'll see you on the next episode. And don't forget, Ever Selene. You know it makes sense. The Ever Selene podcast is researched, produced, and recorded by Matt Sims. Visit everselene.com to find out more.